Hey,
are you listening?
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call
OTR Rob.
Ladies and gentlemen, as responsible parents, you never think of allowing your children to play with poison. And as responsible Americans, it's your duty to protect them from the dangers of the poison we call prejudice. Here in America, racial and religious hatred does exist, sustained by the political adventurers and plain crackpots who are willing to scrap the democratic way of life to attain their own ends. Prejudice in America is centered in their addled philosophy. But unless we guard ourselves and our families, it can find its way into our own lives. Then the poison would do its work, undermining America's unity, sabotaging our prestige abroad, and wrecking our ideal of individual freedom. In your family life, you can effectively carry on a campaign against prejudice. Our youngsters grow up with a pride in their country. Teach them that part of that pride is our tradition of accepting or rejecting people on their individual worth, not on the basis of race or religion or color. Remember, freedom and prejudice can't exist side by side. If you choose freedom, fight prejudice.
Hey, everyone, this is OTR Rob welcoming you to another smoky edition of Michael Shane, Private Detective. This episode is from June 11th, 1945. The episode is entitled Mary Noble Suspect Uncle, and at the time of this recording, it is August 20th, 2020. I didn't do that on purpose. It just happened that way. And here in Northern California, we have four major fires going on all at the same time due to lightning strikes that have hit areas where there are wide swaths of land covered in grassy knolls or grassy areas, and for the life of me, I can't figure out why those during the summertime are not mowed down and taken care of like they should. But I guess we don't work that way here in Northern California, and we need to, I think, really, to stop these types of fires. This wasn't man-made fires, this was natural fires due to lightning strikes, which is weird because I've never seen one bit of rain here during this time period. Anyway, it's affecting my lungs, it's affecting my eyes, and it's coming through my air conditioner, and I have no way of stopping it, but I'm not turning off my air conditioner because the other problem is that we've had 100 degree plus temperatures with humidity in the 80% range, which makes it even hotter because humidity makes the 100 degree temperature feel more like 110. So we got all that going for us, and I can barely see my screen as I record this because my eyes are watering and smarting so much, but I have to get through it because that's what I do in this pandemic. And that's my rant, and I'm sticking to it. And please, stay safe. Use your masks. When you come back, wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Be very careful and stay safe. You don't want to get this virus. You definitely don't. And it's just a fact. It's not my opinion. It's a fact. We are in a pandemic. So anyway, enjoy this pandemic and enjoy Michael Shane, Mr. and Mrs. North, Ebbery Queen, and let George do it, and I'll see you back here next week.
The Adventures of Michael Shane, Private Detective. The people who make 76 gasoline and Triton motor oil, Union Oil Company, present The Adventures of Michael Shane, Private Detective, starring Wally Mayer and Kathy Lewis. As San Francisco's busiest private detective, Mike Shane can be found at almost any hour at almost any spot in the city, except one, perhaps, his apartment. Yet right now, that is just where we find him. Of course, he's there only long enough to pick up his overcoat and two theater tickets. Waiting impatiently in the hall doorway is his attractive assistant, Phyllis Knight.
Mike, what's keeping you?
I can't find the tickets.
Oh, fine. Fine. The master detective.
Oh, I know. I know. I left them in my other suit.
Say, Mike. Somebody's coming up your stairs. A strange woman.
Yeah? I don't know any strange women.
You better not. Your date's with me tonight.
Good evening. Is this the apartment of Michael Shane?
Yes, it is.
And you're Mrs. Shane?
Well, no. I'm his assistant, Phyllis Knight.
Oh, I'd like to see Mr. Shane. It's very, very important.
Well, we were just going
I'm
out.
I'm sorry to impose, but I'm afraid it's a matter of life and death. Would you tell him that, please?
That's all right. I heard it.
Oh, Mr. Shane, you are Mr. Shane?
Yes. Come in.
My name is Mary Noble. I arranged to be in your neighborhood tonight, Mr. Shane. I had to talk to you.
Yes? Won't you sit down?
Oh, thank you. I brought my friends to visit some people across the street at the El Tovar Apartments. Then I slipped away so I could see you, without them suspecting.
I don't understand. Without who suspecting?
Mr. and Mrs. Pringle and Chico.
Chico?
That's Mr. Sabadell.
Oh.
I told them that I'd stay in the car, that I needed fresh air. You see, Uncle Briggs lets me go out only with his friends.
Hmm?
People who will spy on me and tell him what I do. Chico says he loves me, but I know that I'm not pretty. He wants my money.
Now, just a second. You said Uncle Briggs. Would that be Briggs Noble?
Yes, the rich, the upright Mr. Briggs Noble. I'm his niece, and he's trying to poison me.
Oh, now, really?
You don't mean that, I'm sure.
Oh, but I do. For the past 2 weeks, I've had strange sick spells. I'm sure it's the poison.
What does your doctor say?
I haven't had a doctor.
Hmm?
I've never told anyone, but I can't stand it any longer. Uncle Briggs wants me out of the way. I'm a burden.
I can't imagine you being a burden to a millionaire.
That's what's so strange. He's rich, yet he wants more and more money. Next month I'll be 21, and then I inherit my father's money. It's in trust for me. Uncle Briggs wants my money. That's the only way I can explain it.
And just what do you want me to do?
Talk to my uncle. Warn him that you know everything. You'll protect me. Be my bodyguard.
Oh, now, Miss Noble, I'm not that kind of a detective.
You don't believe me, do you?
Well, I can't say. I'm not sure. I might talk to your uncle, but I'm certain you've imagined things.
I see. I thought you really help people.
Hmm?
But I was wrong. No one will help me. No one.
Miss Noble, now, if you'll tell me. Wait a minute. Miss Noble!
Well, that gal certainly got off the merry-go-round backwards. Mm-hmm.
She seemed perfectly reasonable when she first walked in.
But that talk of being a burden on a rich uncle, spied on by his friends, and poison.
I don't know. She walked the fence between sanity and, well, the opposite.
She was scared, Blue, anyway. She almost got me going.
People do talk strangely when they're in terror. She said those friends were across the street.
Mm-hmm. The El Tovar.
Yeah, that's right. I'll tell you what. Let's go after her.
There. There she is, Mike, crossing the street.
Yeah. Miss Noble. Mary Noble. Mary. Mary, stop!
Mike! Mike! That taxi! Mike!
Honest, mister. She fell right in front of my cab. I didn't run over her.
Listen, she's dead, isn't she?
I'm telling you, I saw her fall.
You mean she tripped?
No, no. She slumped in a heap right in front of me. I didn't hit her.
Maybe he's right, Mike.
Hmm?
Look at her dress here. There's no dirt from the wheels. She wasn't dragged.
Sure, I stopped in time. My bumper hardly touched her.
Yes. Yes, huh? It's Mary.
Hurry, hurry.
Oh, heavens.
Yes.
What happened?
Is she...
She's dead.
She's dead. Oh, William, I told you we shouldn't have left in the car.
Well, she said she wanted some fresh air. How could we know this would happen?
I take it you are Mr. and Mrs. Pringle?
Why, yes. Do we know you, sir?
No, I'm Mike Shane, a private detective. Oh. This girl just left my apartment.
Oh, so that's where she went.
Huh?
She got out of the car and said she wanted to take a walk.
You her chauffeur?
Yeah, that's right.
I don't understand, sir. Why did Mary go to you?
She thought somebody was trying to kill her, that her life was in danger.
Ah, rubbish. Tommy rot. The girl imagined things.
Maybe not, Mr. Pringle. You're a good friend of my boss, but I don't mind saying...
Oh, shut up, Dan, for heaven's sake.
Please, gentlemen, gentlemen. Poor Mary. She lies dead. What must we do?
We must go call an ambulance.
We'll call more than an ambulance, honey. We'll call the inspector.
Don't misunderstand me, Mike. It's a sad case, but you admit yourself she was neurotic. This poison business was all in her mind.
Possibly, Inspector. Possibly, but the only way you can be sure of it is to investigate.
And you ask for an autopsy, Mike. All right, I've ordered it against my own judgment. That's as far as I can go.
You know, we really don't have any proof, Mike. Maybe she just had a heart spell and fell in front of the taxi.
Police certainly can't investigate Briggs Noble on such weak evidence. He comes from one of the oldest families in San Francisco. He's rich, society. Murder isn't his line, Mike.
All right, Inspector, all right. But will you do one thing more for me?
What is it?
Go out with us to see Briggs Noble.
Oh, Mike, you're the most stubborn. We gotta know what we're talking about first.
I'll do the talking if you want. I'll take the blame. But I want you there in case.
Wait a second. Yes?
Autopsy report, sir. Mary Noble. Examination of stomach shows heavy dose of poison.
Mike, you were right.
Sergeant, what was the poison? Arsenic?
Well, I can't tell, sir. Autopsy surgeon says the victim's hands are clenched tight and toes turned under. He says that the same symptoms of a rare native poison from South America.
I see. Mike, is there anything you want to ask him?
No. No, just tell him if they find anything else to call you at the home of Briggs Noble.
In just a moment, we'll return to the adventures of Michael Shane. Ladies and gentlemen, sludge in an engine is terrible stuff. It sticks to the pistons, valves, and other working parts, and it slows down and interferes with smooth engine performance. The sludge formed by some oils is so sticky that it doesn't ordinarily drain out when the oil is changed, but continues to accumulate. The only way to get rid of it is to have your engine flushed out occasionally. Your Union Oil Minuteman can perform this service for you quickly and cheaply. He has a special solvent action flushing oil known as Cleanse Oil. Now, Cleanse Oil is harmless to your engine, but it cuts the sludge in a hurry. So when the Cleanse Oil is drained out, the sludge flushes right out with it, leaving the engine nice and clean. Then, with a fresh supply of pure paraffin-based Triton motor oil, you're all set for hundreds of miles of clean, safe engine operation. Just drive in wherever you see the sign of the big orange and blue 76 and ask for Union Oil Engine Flushing Service. Thank you. Mike, Phyllis, and the inspector have just entered the ornate library of Briggs Noble. Noble stands in front of the fireplace.
This is the first time I've had the pleasure of meeting you, Mr. Shane. I'm told you already know my friends here.
Yes, yes, but the inspector doesn't.
Oh, Mr. and Mrs. Pringle, Mr. Sabadell, and of course my chauffeur, Dan Casey.
How do you do?
How do you know?
I imagine, Mr. Shane, that you've come here to tell me my niece appealed to you for protection.
Yes, she did, Mr. Noble. I told your friends that.
Yes. Oh, poor girl. I never understood her. She was so moody.
Hmm?
I tried to make her happy, gave her everything she asked for, except the one thing she really wanted, her pretty face. So she chose the final remedy.
You mean she committed suicide?
What else? She threw herself under a taxi cab.
It's not that simple, Mr. Noble. The autopsy shows she was not killed by the taxi.
Really?
No, she was poisoned.
What? Poisoned? Oh. Why?
Quite bent on death, wasn't she?
Perhaps not, sir. You see, we think she was murdered.
Oh, no. No.
Did she have any enemies, Mr. Noble?
None. Nor many friends. I suppose that was the trouble.
Do any of you know if she was sick during the past couple of weeks?
Why, yes. I remember one day. I was driving her and Mr. Savadell. She almost fainted. You remember it, sir?
I remember.
Did she tell you, Mr. Savadell, that she planned to see a detective tonight?
No. I come in, Mr. and Mrs. Pringle are with her. I give Maria a box of candy. We make small talk. Mm-hmm. She keeps saying we must all go visit some friend. Although that is all, it's difficult to remember. Mm.
Mr. Noble, your niece said she was to come into an inheritance on her 21st birthday. Where will that money go now?
Well, I'm the last member of the family. It'll come to me.
Oh, I see. Oh,
I know.
Our family has had a tragic history. All violent deaths. Mm. My brother Edward died in a shipwreck off China. My nephew, Grant Noble, disappeared in his plane over Brazil. Dodd Noble, Mary's father, was crushed in a train wreck.
Aren't the women alive?
No. Edward and Dodd married, but their wives are gone, too. It's been very, very depressing.
Mr. Noble, it's time to be frank with you. Your niece came to me for protection from you. She said you were trying to poison her.
Why, that's fantastic, Miss...
She thought that about me. Poor girl. I told you she had strange moods.
It's a very weak explanation, sir. You admit she had no enemies and that you would inherit her estate.
Why should I want her money? I have more now than I want. You gentlemen don't realize the penalties of wealth.
That's neither here nor there, sir. Mary Noble was poisoned. She named you. It's my duty to determine the facts.
I see, Inspector, that you're determined to make me out a murderer. All I can say is this. I'm not guilty.
But, Mr. Noble...
Furthermore, if you insist upon bringing charges against me, I'm a man of wealth and power. I can employ the best legal counsel. I think you'd look very embarrassing in court. It would not benefit your reputation.
I see. Thank you for the warning, sir. And good night.
Well, I don't mean to tell you boys your own business, but why didn't you search the house for poison?
Well, for one thing, the killer would be smart enough to remove it. Second, I don't think Noble is our man. He has no motive.
Don't tell me the brave inspector is scared out.
No,
by
no. Look at it this way, Mike. Poison is one of the subtlest types of murder. Mm-hmm. The killer figures that because nobody sees him actually give the victim poison, no jury will convict him on circumstantial evidence. Noble has a perfect alibi. She committed suicide. He ought to know. He's our uncle.
If it were suicide, the girl would hardly run to Mike to protect her life and then take poison.
Unless she hated her uncle enough to try to frame him with her murder.
Well, let's get rid of this suicide alibi right now. Inspector, if she took poison, it must have been in some container.
Uh-huh.
Now, we didn't find anything suspicious in her purse, but she would have to leave the bottle someplace. Now, where was she just before she died?
In your apartment. But she didn't swallow anything there.
And before that, she was in her car. So how about giving that a quick once over, huh?
Okay, by me. Suppose it's the car over there by the driveway?
Well, we'll find out.
Uh-huh. It's a limousine with a chauffeur's compartment.
Here, here's the light switch.
See anything, Mike?
Magazines, lap robe, newspapers and stuff. Now, there's nothing under this cushion. No bottle.
Well, then she didn't have any poison with her in the car.
That still doesn't rule out suicide.
Hey, wait a minute, Inspector.
What?
We've been a couple of dopes. Mary accused her uncle. We accepted that and forgot everyone else.
Got anybody in mind?
Yes, the autopsy report said Mary's hands and toes were curled up tight, the symptoms of a South American poison. Who in that house there is a Latin?
Savadell. Of course.
That's enough for me, kids. We're making a round trip right now.
But of course, gentlemen, I am from South America. My father was a trader on the Amazon River.
Then maybe it's more than coincidence that Mary was killed by a rare native poison from South America.
What? Well, you didn't tell us that.
A poison from... Oh, Santa Maria... Gentlemen, this is bad.
You're telling us.
No, you do not understand. You have not been in this room before. Look on the walls.
Hmm?
Mr. Noble has poison spear, poison arrow, poison darts. Yeah. All from South America.
So, what about this, Mr. Noble?
It's true.
Oh, fine.
Pringle brought them to me from Ecuador. They were poisoned, but not now. I had the stuff all soaked off when I mounted them.
Mr. Pringle, is it possible to use that poison after it's been removed?
Well, I don't know. The natives in South America use a number of poisons. They act in different ways.
I can assure you that Mary did not die of poison from this collection.
Ah?
Where she procured it is a question for you detectives.
You still insist it was suicide?
I do.
Mike?
Hmm?
Maybe there's another way we can settle that.
Yeah, what is it?
Well, Mary seems to have been a very lonely girl. It's very common for lonely girls to keep diaries.
Hmm?
Well, if Mary kept one, perhaps it would tell us what she intended to do.
Yes, yes, yes. I gave her a diary for Christmas. She always kept it on the top of the desk up in her room.
Swell, then up to the bedroom we go.
That's her desk over there by the window.
And we'll find it on top, huh?
That's right. It's a big green and gold book.
Well, I don't see it, Mike.
Maybe it's in the drawer.
No. No, just the usual stuff. Well, it's not here, Mr. Noble.
No, that's very strange. Could she have hidden it?
Well, I don't know if it's important enough to make a search right now. We'll go on with the question.
Noble, do you mind...
You're going?
Well, yes. My wife and I'd like to get home. If there's nothing we can do for you, we'll say goodnight.
Well, the inspector may not have done with you.
Oh, I think so. If we need you, Mr. Noble can give us your address and phone number.
Yes, of course. Well, good night, then.
Mrs. Pringle, one moment, please.
Pardon?
Your purse. Hasn't it taken on weight very suddenly?
What?
May I look inside, please?
Why, this?
Well, Mrs. Pringle?
A diary.
Well, I didn't know. Mr. Noble motioned to me to open my purse, and he slipped something in. I didn't know it was a diary. You see, it's a different color.
I'll admit it. I misled you all. I slipped the diary into her purse while you were searching the desk.
It certainly doesn't help your case, Mr. Noble.
I didn't know what peculiar ideas Mary might have written down. I wanted to protect her memory. And yes, my reputation.
Mike?
Hmm?
Did you read anything in it?
Nothing very unusual so far. No mention of suicide.
Mr. Savadell, I gather that you proposed to Mary.
Oh, many times.
We never followed up our questions with you either, sir.
I know what you have in mind, but you were wrong. Hmm. I killed the girl I love? No.
Mr. Inspector, excuse me. I realize this diary episode with my wife looked suspicious. But since Mr. Noble has admitted the fault, I think we're cleared. Would you let us go home now? Tonight's been a great strain on my wife.
Well, we'd all like to go home.
Well, I wouldn't ask it, sir, but my wife is not in good health.
I see. What do you say, Mike?
Certainly, by all means.
All right, Mr. Pringle.
Thank you very much. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Good night.
Good night. Good night.
And now, Mike?
Wait. Okay.
Now, Mr. Noble, if you please, the address of Mr. and Mrs. Pringle.
I suppose you boys know this may be a wild goose chase.
Oh, I don't think so, Angel. The Pringles were a little too anxious to get home.
And I'm still not satisfied about that diary in the purse. They put on quite an innocent act, the way Noble came to their rescue.
Yeah. There's the house, number 1511.
Yeah, but it's all dark.
That's funny. We drove slowly so we'd get here ahead of them. We wanted to catch them with whatever they're up to.
Wait, Inspector. There's a light in the garage.
Yeah. Okay, stop your engine, Mike.
Close that door gently, Mike.
Okay. Now... leave us walk on the grass so they won't hear us.
And keep in the shadows.
Look. Look. They're both in the garage.
Let's cross the driveway.
What in blazes are they doing? They got a bucket of... Uh-oh.
Yeah. Pringle's got some of those javelins. Poison javelins.
Soaking them in the bucket.
All right. Let's make an entrance.
This water isn't hot enough. It's got to be boiling.
Well, I'll go heat a kettle, then.
Don't bother, Mrs. Pringle. You're in enough hot water right now.
William!
Shane! Inspector! What's the meaning of this?
So you cook the spear points in hot water to extract the poison?
I don't know. I was just trying to find out, to see if it still had power.
Mike, there's a car coming up the driveway.
Yeah. Who is it? Why is he blowing the horn?
Oh, I don't... Hey, cut it out! Get off that horn!
There's something wrong. Come on.
There's a man slumped over the steering wheel.
I'll pull him off the horn. Okay, mister. Raise up.
Holy jump. It's Sabadell.
Yes, unconscious.
But how? Who?
Here's the answer. Remember the symptoms of that South American poison? Tight, clenched hands? Look.
We'll return to Mike and Phil in just a moment. Friends, it's pretty safe to say that carbon is the number one enemy of your automobile engine. Carbon burns valves, gums up piston rings, and may lead to expensive repair bills. Therefore, anything that reduces carbon formation is of interest to careful drivers. And that's just what Triton Motor Oil does. Yes, that's right. Triton Motor Oil cuts down carbon. Why? Well, nearly all carbon comes from the lubricating oil, and not from the gasoline, as so many people think. But all lubricating oils are not the same in their carbon-forming tendencies. In fact, in a recent comparative test made with the 7 leading motor oils sold here in the West, Triton contained 38% fewer carbon-forming elements than the next best oil, 86% less than the average. The secret of Triton's superiority lies in the Union Oil Company's exclusive propane solvent refining process, a process so valuable that it's been patented by Union Oil Company. So, friends, with mechanics as scarce as they are today, why not take advantage of the extra protection the 100% pure paraffin-based Triton motor oil will give you against carbon? You can buy Triton motor oil at all Union Oil Minuteman stations. Just look for the sign of the big orange and blue 76. Thank you. An ambulance has carried the unconscious Sabadell to the hospital. Mike, Phyllis, and the inspector have returned to the Pringle garage with Mr. and Mrs. Pringle.
I know it looks bad, gentlemen, but you didn't give us a chance to explain.
Well, you've got your chance now, Mr. Pringle. Make the most of it.
You were out here in your garage trying to get poison off two South American hunting spears. What for?
Well, because they're the same type spears I brought Noble from Ecuador. I wanted to collect the poison and send it to the police.
So you people could compare it with the poison found in Mary's stomach.
Yeah. Well, you're suddenly very helpful, Mrs. Pringle, after you tried to smuggle Mary's diary away from the police.
But I didn't mean to. That's what made William and I think Mr. Noble might be guilty after all.
Looks to me like all three of you are in the same boat.
At least we don't have to consider Sabadell any longer.
Yes. As I see it, Sabadell was really in love with Mary. He tore over here to the Pringles for the same reason we did, because he figured they were in cahoots with Noble.
Then collapsed in his car from the same poison.
Okay, but which of these three did it? And is the poison from these three spears?
Wait a minute. I got a new angle, Inspector. Mary was killed by the poison. Sabadell got enough of it to send him to the hospital, but nobody else has keeled over tonight.
That's right.
Then what did Mary and Sabadell eat or drink that nobody else touched?
Did all of you people eat dinner together?
Yes, we did.
Well, then it's not the food. Did either of you see Mary or Sabadell drink anything which you didn't?
Not that I remember.
Well, they must have a food or drink or something that... Wait a minute.
What?
Wait a minute. How about candy? Sabadell said he brought Mary a box tonight.
Oh, he always did. Mary was a candy fiend. Ate chocolates all day long.
Did you eat any tonight?
Oh, no. They're much too sweet for me.
And you, Mrs. Pringle?
I never touched chocolates.
Then they did eat something which you didn't.
If Mary always ate chocolates, that would be an ideal way to give her the poison. The sugar in the stuff might slow down the effect. We may be wrong, but we've got to find that box of chocolates.
Well, the last I saw of it, Mary and Mr. Sabadell had it with them in the car.
But we searched the car, Mike.
Yes, honey, yes, but we were looking for a bottle of poison. We weren't thinking of candy. There was an awful lot of stuff in that car. We've got to look again, and it better be fast.
I put the car in the garage here just a minute ago. If I'd known you fellows wanted to look at it...
That's all right, Dan. That's all right. Thanks for letting us in.
Sure. Anything else I can do for you?
No, thanks, Dan.
Okay, if you want me, I'll be in my room. It's right overhead.
All right. Okay, Dan. Thanks.
We better look good this time, Mike.
Yeah.
You need more light in there?
No. Did you find anything, Inspector?
No.
Nor I. Just the same stuff I found before.
It's hopeless, Mike. No killer would poison the girl and leave a box of chocolates high and dry for the police. He wouldn't be that dumb.
It isn't a question of dumbness, Inspector. It's a question of time.
But he'd still get rid of the chocolates. We don't know where to look for him.
Now, let me think. He wouldn't throw the chocolates out of the car. Somebody might pick them up and eat them.
That means he must have brought them back here.
Think, Inspector, think. Would he destroy the chocolates or hide them?
He'd destroy them.
That means the box, too. He'd have to burn it.
I saw an incinerator on this side of the garage.
Lead us to it, Angel.
Mike, you got a hold of something. Well, pull it. Come on, pull it out.
Here you are.
The box of chocolates. Open it up.
They're mashed up a bit, but we can analyze them, and if the fingerprints aren't too mussed over...
Well, they probably are. Wait a minute, honey.
Yeah?
Back at my apartment, didn't Mary say she had told no one else but you and me that her uncle was trying to poison her?
Yeah, that's right.
Yet one other person tonight seemed to know something about it. When we were looking at Mary's body, he made a crack about Noble. It was Dan Casey.
Yes? Oh, Mr. Shane.
Yeah, do you mind if we come in for a minute, Dan?
Why, glad to have you.
Dan, tonight when we found Mary Noble's body, I heard you start to tell Mr. Pringle that your boss could stand some investigating.
Well, I guess I was right, wasn't I?
Perhaps, but before Mary came to me, she hadn't told her fears to a living soul. Yet you were able to name Briggs Noble.
Well, you know, that's just one of those things.
Mind if we take a little look around your room, Dan?
Now, hold on. What is it you want?
Well, here's one thing we want on your dresser.
This dish of chocolates here.
What of it? Miss Mary gave them to me.
You mind eating a piece?
No, of course not.
That's it. Oh, by the way, I got a few more chocolates here in my pocket. It's the same kind.
Huh?
They had a few ashes on them, but I cleaned them off. Good as new.
Ashes?
Yes, from the incinerator. But I'll just add them to your dish here and mix them all around like that. Now, would you eat another?
Yeah.
Go on. Eat a piece. Eat two or three.
No. No, I won't.
No. I didn't think you would. Okay, Inspector, I think this is where you take over.
I insist. You must have a drink. A cup of peace between the inspector and myself.
Well, I guess I would drink to them.
I can understand your suspicions of me, gentlemen, when I kept telling you it was suicide.
But what gets me, Mr. Noble, is how you could employ a chauffeur for months and not recognize him as your own nephew.
You forget I hadn't seen him for over 10 years. When he disappeared in his plane over Brazil, he was hardly more than a boy. But he was dead. The whole family thought he was dead.
But, Mr. Noble, he was Mary's cousin. Could he still inherit her money?
Certainly. The inheritance was so arranged that it would go either to him or, if dead, to me.
So he planned to disappear after tonight and come back in a few months as the long-lost heir. Quite a scheme. Chocolate-coated murder.
Say, speaking of that, do you think there's a candy store open at this hour? I'd like to buy Phil a box of chocolates.
No, thanks, no. After tonight, I've lost my sweet tooth.
Oh, but maybe when you see him, honey, nice, big, luscious bonbon.
Mike Shane, you haven't given me a box of chocolates in years. If you do it now, I'll know what to expect.
Oh, no, you won't, Angel. Oh, no, you won't.
Tune in again next week at 8 for another adventure with Michael Shane, Private Detective, starring Wally Mayer and Kathy Lewis, with Joe Forte as the inspector. Tonight's story was written by Richard DeGraff and based on the character created by Brett Halliday. Music was composed and directed by Bernard Katz. This is John Lang saying goodnight for the people who make 76 Gasoline and Triton Motor Oil, Union Oil Company. This is the Mutual Don Lee Broadcasting System. Now, Ellery Queen in The Adventure of the Message in Red. Because it relieves headache pain so fast.
Take an Anacin.
Because it gives prolonged relief.
Take an Anacin.
Because it's made like a doctor's prescription.
Take an Anacin.
Anacin presents The Adventures of Ellery Queen. Tonight, the makers of Anacin bring you another thrilling adventure of Ellery Queen, the celebrated gentleman detective. Ellery Queen invites you to match wits with him as he relates another story of a crime he alone unraveled. Before revealing the solution, he gives you a chance to solve the mystery. Tonight, Anacin's guest, who will represent you home armchair detectives, is the famous actor Victor Jory. And now here's Ellery Queen, master detective, and your Anacin host for the next half hour.
Thank you, Don Hancock, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Well, tonight's mystery really had my father going.
Your father, huh?
Oh, Nicky.
I suppose all those murders were duck soup for you, huh?
Oh, no, Nicky, this case was no harder than many I've had. Anyway, I call it The Adventure of the Message in Red.
Hotel Arbutus, public stenographer. Yes, I'm Miss Kirby. At this hour, but... All right. If you drop into my office right away, I'll try to get it out tonight. Oh, why can't they just take their old business letters during the day? Oh, gee, I'm tired. I better douse my eyes with cold water. I'm so sleepy I could... So soon. Coming. Gee, they must have used a house phone from the lobby. Come in, won't you?
Hooray! Hooray! In Dixieland!
Now, who's there? Nobody out here. Oh. Now, who'd be using that talky thing from the vestibule? Nobody does. Yes? Yes, this Miss Hazel? But at this time of night? I was just going to bed. Been washing my supper dishes. All right. If they've just got to have a reader's report on it by tomorrow morning... Just open the vestibule door, and my apartment's the first door on your right. Would be my luck if it's one of those half a million word jobs. Just a second. Oh, I wish I were in the land of cotton. Old times there are not...
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And that's all you've got to tell me, Pinkett? Call back when you make sense. Sorry, Ellery, to keep you and Nicky waiting.
Those two killings last night, Dad, huh?
Yes. Lasted.
What two killings, Inspector? I haven't seen today's paper.
Two girls, Nicky. First one, a public stander with the Hotel Arbutus on Lexington Avenue. Shot to death at 9:15 p.m. Name of Kirby.
Second one, a part-time manuscript reader for Mason and Morrison, the publishers of Miss Hazel... Shot to death around 10:30 p.m. in her Greenwich Village apartment.
Both has opened their doors. No evidence of robbery. Both unmarried, unattractive, no entangling alliances. Lived alone. No witnesses, no clues, no motive. And the girls never knew each other. Never knew any of the same people. Cute?
Then the murders aren't connected, Inspector.
But they are, Nicky. Ballistics reports the same gun killed both of them.
I don't wonder you're puzzled.
I think it's a nut kill myself, Ellery. Yes, Billy?
Afternoon, Sergeant.
Hi, Miss Porter. Maestro.
Hello, Sergeant.
Inspector. Know what?
No. What?
Another one.
No.
What? Yeah, a girl shot to death. She answered her door around 1 a.m. last night. Body wasn't found till this morning.
Ooh, number three last night.
Who is this one, Bailey?
Lady's maid, Lucille Dubois.
Dubois, Sergeant, French.
Yeah, French maid, worked for the Canellas.
Canella? The Vetti Canella?
The same.
She was shot in the Canella house, Sergeant.
Yeah, that 199-room shack on Upper Fifth Avenue, in her bedroom.
A stenographer, a publisher's reader, and a lady's maid. Mind if I sit in, Dad?
You can make any sense out of it, son. Come on.
Oh, my poor head. My home overrun with police officers. I've had to cancel the most important appointment this afternoon with my hairdresser.
And Mrs. Canella, if you let me get away...
My husband is simply furious. My daughter, poor child, prostrate.
Look, Mrs. Canella...
And I'm on the verge of losing what little mind I have.
Mrs. Canella...
You understand, Mr. Crean. I know you do.
The death of your maid has upset you, naturally.
Oh, yes. Where am I going to turn? How can I replace Lucille? You don't know the trouble I had getting her originally. And now she's dead. It's not fair. It isn't.
The trouble is, gentlemen, you don't know the problems we girls have.
Yes, yes.
Look, madam, how did this happen?
I'm sure I don't know. People shooting off guns in my home and everything. I'm so glad I wasn't home when it happened, even though the house is completely soundproof.
Your husband, will you, madam?
Mr. Canella? Oh, no. No, he was out somewhere. His club or something.
How about your daughter?
Madge. Oh, now, please. Don't drag poor Madge into this. She's suffered so much already.
When did you first learn your maid was dead, Mrs. Canella?
About 11 o'clock this morning, Mr. Crean. When she didn't bring my breakfast in bed, I knew instantly something was wrong.
Well, of course. That's the way you tell.
Oh, yes. I rang and I rang and I rang.
Mrs. Canella, who found the stiff?
Stiff?
The remains, madam.
Why, my daughter. One of the servants told Madge that Lucille's light was still on this morning, and she didn't answer the door. So Madge went up to the servants' quarters and went in and... The poor child, the poor child. That's why no one answered my rings, you see.
Leaving you without breakfast. Oh, that's simply frightful,
oh, yes,
Mrs. Canella. Yes. Well, suppose you have a little snack of caviar and cold pheasant or something while we hunt up your dog.
Oh, dear. Must you?
Must we what, madam?
Give Madge the third degree or whatever it is. You don't know how sensitive the child is. She's always been so delicate. She shrinks so from the more brutal aspects of life.
Oh, Mother, stop drooling.
Oh, Madge, darling, are you all right, dear?
Definitely not. Are these some more policemen? Who's the wench, your sob sister?
The wench is Nicky Porter, Mr. Queen's secretary.
Ellery Queen.
Sergeant Vili.
Inspector Queen. Now, Miss Canella.
And you're in charge. Why isn't that body taken away, and who's going to clean up the mess? And you're to keep reporters out, too, do you hear? Thing like this happening now. Do you hear me? No, newspaper men.
Oh, dearest, don't excite yourself.
Oh, shut up, Mother. All this is your silly fault anyway.
My fault?
Yes, I told you long ago you should send that snoop packing, but no, you had to hang on to it till she had the bad taste to get herself murdered all over our house. What am I going to say to Evie?
Evie?
My fiancé. At least our engagement was supposed to be announced this week. One of the very best Boston families. He'll never stand for a scandal.
Why should you think there's going to be a scandal, Miss Canella?
Oh, well, isn't a murder scandal enough?
I don't think that's what your daughter meant, Mrs. Canella. Yeah?
Nothing. Nothing at all. I didn't mean anything.
Let's take a look at the corpse.
Interesting.
What, Ellie?
Notice the facing surfaces, the tips of her index and middle fingers, Dad, on the right hand.
Huh. All calloused. Funny place for calluses.
Yes.
If you gentlemen are through admiring Miss Dubois' calluses, would you mind covering up again so I can turn around?
Hmm? Oh. All right now, Nicky.
But how do you know this maid's murder is connected with the other two murders?
Bradley was here early and dug the bullet out of her chest, Nicky. Ballistics just reported it came the same gun that shot the Kirby and Hazel girls. Just what the connection is, I'm blessed. Oh, Vili?
Yeah, you throw the corpus, Inspector. The morgue wagon's here for the pickup.
Take her away.
She's all yours, boy.
What did you find out about the other servants, Sergeant?
Names? Butler James Smathers, cook Sally Fabian, chauffeur Waller Boyle. Upstairs maid Vera Andorf. Smathers and Boyle share a double room, so do the Fabian and Andorf women. Each bunkie alibis the other for last night. Period.
Mother, you know you shouldn't be up here. It's just your morbid curiosity.
Oh, I don't know why you say such things to me, Madge, baby. Oh, look what they're doing.
Stay out here in the hall, Margaret. You too, Madge.
Inspector Queen.
Who are you?
I'm Milford Canella. My wife just phoned my club. Is there anything I can do?
Excuse me, folks. Okay, boys, take her through.
Oh, Madge, I can't look. Oh, poor Lucy.
Be yourself, Mother.
Well, Mr. Canella, we were just... Pardon me. Harry, what's that you just picked up?
Oh, well, this piece of scrap paper was hidden by Lucille Dubois' body, Dad.
A message in red. Red?
Message. Let me see.
In red, is it? Oh, it is.
Written in blood.
She must have lingered a few minutes after the shot. When that killer left, she tried to write something before she died.
What's it say, Ellery?
Starts with a capital M, but there are a lot of spatters in the paper, and I can't quite make the rest out.
I'll have Craney look it over in the police lab. He'll decipher it. Give it to me, son.
It's quite important that you make a quick arrest, Inspector.
What's that mean, Mr. Canella?
I expect very shortly to be appointed to an extremely important diplomatic post abroad. So this unfortunate little affair must be cleared up at once. And without scandal.
Milford has worked so hard for the honor.
Yes, it's been Father's pet dream.
In fact, Inspector, unless you solve this case within 24 hours, I may have to see to it that, that someone else is put in charge. Come, Margaret.
Madge.
And Father's just the little guy who can do it.
Dad. Harry, where are you going?
Out to confirm a theory, Dad.
Theory? About what, son?
About the connection between the three murders last night. I think I know now what it was. Anybody care to come along?
And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the beginning of our mystery. We'll tell you more in just a moment, but first, here's Don Hancock for Aniston.
Friends, if you want quick, comforting relief from pounding headache pain...
Take an Aniston.
Yes, take an Aniston, because Aniston relieves headache pain so swiftly. Millions now know that easy-to-take Aniston tablets act fast, give prolonged relief. And that's why we say...
Take an Aniston.
There's a good reason why Aniston relieves the agonizing pain of headaches so much more quickly. Aniston is made like a doctor's prescription. That is, it contains not just one, but a combination of medically proven active ingredients. Your own physician or dentist may have already recommended Aniston to you. That's how millions first discovered Aniston's incredibly fast relief. And now, at the first sign of the pains of headache, neuralgia, or neuritis, they simply...
Take an Aniston.
Aniston, spelled A-N-A-C-I-N, is sold at all druggists. So if you want fast, prolonged relief from headache pain...
Take an Aniston.
And now, back to our story. It's a short time later, and the inspector's car, with Sergeant Bealey at the wheel, is threading its way through midtown Manhattan traffic.
But what is the connection, Ellery?
And how'd you know, Marshal?
Well, what was the occupation of the first victim, the Kirby girl?
Publishing Abbott.
And the second one, Miss Hazel?
The Greenwich Village gal?
Or she was a part-time manuscript reader for Mason and Morrison.
A public stenographer, a publisher's reader. Now, Dad, you recall the peculiar calluses we found on Lucille Dubois' right hand?
And the facing sides of the tips of her index and middle fingers.
What very ordinary activity, if sufficiently prolonged, would cause calluses there?
Holding a pen or a pencil.
Yes, Nikki, writing. But not casual writing, like the occasional writing of letters. Lucille Dubois was writing a great deal for a long time. Weeks, months.
A diary.
Perhaps, at least a very extensive manuscript in longhand, Sergeant. So, we have Lucille Dubois, lady's maid in a very wealthy society family, writing a long manuscript by hand. When it was finished, what would happen to such a manuscript?
You take it to a public stenographer.
To be typed.
Surely, the unfortunate Miss Kirby. And where do people usually take type manuscripts?
To a publisher.
And most publishers employ readers to weed out undesirable submissions. And that's your Miss Hazel of the Village. Simple?
Maestro, you're a genius.
The married girls are probably the only three people in the world who've read a certain unpublished manuscript.
And that's why they were murdered.
Man, it must be dynamite. The killer must have swiped it, probably from the Hazel girl's apartment in the village after he bumped her off.
And destroyed it, Teddy.
Yes, but there's still a possibility that something...
Well, here we are, Maestro.
Here's Rockefeller Center. Come on.
I
I must say, Mason and Morrison go in for book publishing in a large and handsome way, Ellery.
They're a bit on the sensational side, Nikki. Miss Jenkins?
Yes, Alberta Jenkins.
Are you the assistant editor my son spoke to on the receptionist phone?
Yes, and you must be Inspector Queen.
That's right.
I must say I'm all of a flutter. Am I arrested?
Not exactly, Miss Jenkins. Did you bring the list I asked you for?
Here it is. All the manuscripts turned over to Miss Hazel the past few months for a reader's report. Let me see, Ellery.
Say, she read a lot, doesn't she?
It'll be quite recent, I think.
Ah, look at this entry, Dad.
Maid tells all. By Lucille Dubois.
That's
wow!
It.
Miss Jenkins, where's this manuscript? Are you sure Miss Hazel didn't return it to Mason and Morrison?
I'm pretty sure she didn't inspect it, but come into my office. No, it isn't here.
Oh, no.
But I just remembered. Where is that again?
Remembered what, Miss Jenkins?
There was a letter from Miss Hazel in this morning's mail. I've been so busy today. Here it is. Still unopened.
Gammy.
Give that to me, baby.
Well.
Dear Miss Jenkins, enclosed is a short preliminary report on three of the last batch of manuscripts.
I will personally deliver the manuscripts plus full reports later this week. The enclosed thumbnail reports cover number one.
Give Back My Lover by Flo Gently.
Phooey. Romance in a Phone Booth, my John Jett bag. Wow.
And The Maid Tells All by Lucille Dubois.
No.
Miss Jenkins, would you mind leaving us for a moment?
I certainly do mind, Mr. Queen, but... Well...
Where's that report the Hazel woman enclosed? Here.
Now we'll find out.
Maid Tells All. Sensational true life story of high life as seen from backstairs. Style is faulty. Author obviously thinks in French, but might be worth a rewrite. Possibly high sales appeal, but must be screened carefully by legal departments against libel suits. That's all.
Maid's manuscripts filled a lot of nasty, unsuspected stuff about the Canellas that would have cost Milford Canella that high diplomatic post he's been angling for.
Or Madge Canella, her blue-blood Boston marriage.
Yeah, somehow the killer discovered what Lucille was writing, who typed her manuscript, and the name of the publisher she sent it to.
And through the publisher, which reader had it.
So he's got to wipe out whoever read it. Steno, wham. Reader, wham. And he swipes the manuscript from her apartment. Then he goes back to the Canella dump and blasts Lucille in the secret society.
Too safe, blasted. I thought we might find a clue here to the killer's identity. But apparently the whole Canella family has motive.
Stymied. Let's go down to headquarters. Maybe the autopsy's turned up something.
Don't drive so fast, Sergeant. You just passed a snail.
There's nothing to rush for, Miss Porter.
You could only see some daylight.
In this darkness, Inspector?
Oh, at least I'm enjoying this ride on the East River Drive. Or I would be if the great man's thoughts weren't...
Of course.
Oh, Mr. Queen is with us again.
Why, then,
The answer, Dad. It's right in your pocket.
What answer?
To the triple header, Maestro.
My pocket.
I forgot. You forgot. We all forgot, Dad. A certain message in red.
Holy. That dang message Lucille wrote in her own blood.
Say.
The one we couldn't decipher.
How'd I put it? Here. What's the matter with
Come
me?
On.
Billy, get down to headquarters, quick.
Yeah, man. If anybody can make it out, it's that whistling lab men we're in. Sailing over the mountain.
Sure, beat
it up.
Huh? What's eating you now, son?
A car right in our trail coming up fast.
Some drunk who wants a race.
With a police car out.
Billy, he's out to wreck us.
Oh, yeah?
Keep going faster.
Look out, Sergeant.
Why the...
No, not with Nicky in the car.
Don't mind me.
He's doing it.
I can only spot the driver. It's too dark.
Billy!
Tell me, I'm in one piece.
Sorry. I'm okay, too. Inspector.
No bones broken, Vili. Ellery.
By a miracle, we're all right. Oh, Vili, that was quick thinking.
Certainly was.
Yeah, if it weren't for the way you took that crash, Sergeant,
We've been through the retaining wall at the bottom of the river.
Thanks, but look at the car, Inspector.
Never mind the car. Why?
Dad, Lucille's message.
Huh?
All three Canellas were present when I found it under Lucille's body this afternoon.
One of them must have trailed us.
Waiting a chance to destroy Lucille's clue before we could get it to headquarters.
Then the killer is one of the Canellas. And her message tells which one.
Hit a car, Peavy. Let's get to that lab.
Sergeant.
Well, Peavy?
What's the lab verdict?
Well, it's this way.
Sergeant.
No good.
Kind of looks like a puzzler, Inspector.
Never mind characterizing it, Vili. What did they say the message is?
It starts with a capital M, Maestro, like you said, then a period.
M period, yes.
Then a space, then a capital K, then a small I-N, the N trailing off like she died before she could finish the word. And that's all.
Capital M period, space, capital K, small I-N.
Capital K, small I-N. The start of the name Canella.
No doubt about it, Nicky.
But what's the capital M period space mean?
Last name Canella. M period must be the initial of one of the Canella's first names.
Milford Canella. M for Milford.
Well, the daughter's name also starts with an M, Nicky. Madge.
Well, then it's either Madge or old man.
Let's not leave out Mrs. Canella. Don't you recall Canella addressing his wife as Margaret?
Frost. Another washout. Again, it could be any of the three. Let's go back to the Canella house. I'll find out which one it is. Good evening.
Oh, dear. That Inspector man again.
And that nice Mr. Queen, etc.
Well, Inspector, have you cleared up this mess?
Where were you three late this afternoon and early evening? Where were you?
I needed air. I was strolling in Central Park.
Alone, Mrs. Canella?
Yes.
How about you, Mr. Canella?
Well, as a matter of fact, I took a walk myself down Fifth Avenue. Very upsetting business, you know.
Meet anybody you know, Mr. Canella?
No.
And you, Miss Canella?
I took one of our cars and drove around town for a while just to cool off. I'd had a phone call from dear Evie in Boston.
My daughter's fiancé told her they'd better wait about announcing the engagement until this miserable affair blows over. I knew it. I just knew it.
Aren't we getting off the track?
No alibis.
Hey, Evie. Anything to ask these three people before I take them downtown for a real going over?
No, but why do you want to take them to headquarters, Dad?
Why do I... To find out which one of them bumped off the Kirby and Hazel girls and Mrs. Canella's maid. That's why.
Oh, I can tell you that, Dad. Right here and now. And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the mystery. Now, suppose you home armchair detectives match wits with Aniston's guest for this evening.
And tonight, ladies and gentlemen, our guest, the famous actor of stage, screen, and radio, is Mr. Victor Jory, who is starring on Broadway in the hit play, Therese.
Good evening, Mr. Jory. It's nice to have you with us. Well, Mr. Jory, I guess tonight's show is a change for you, isn't it?
It certainly is. Because generally I'm on the other end. I'm the prisonist and the murdering, Hillary.
Well, you always are the criminal, but you're always so wonderful, too.
Well, thank you, Nicky. I hope you'll like me just as well in the role of detective.
Sure. Well, Mr. Jory, who do you think murdered the three women?
Well, I'm not very sure. I think it was the mother, Margaret Canella.
Why do you think that?
My only reason for thinking that is because the Milford Canella... suspicion is planted on him instantly by the fact that he says that he has a very important post and it's very valuable to him. The daughter backs that up. The mother has said nothing. Furthermore, the mother's alibi, being in Central Park, seems to me one that could be shaken less easily than the man who walked down Fifth Avenue, which might be checked on, or the girl in the car, because the car could be checked on afterwards.
Thank you, Mr. Jory. You'll find out in just a moment if your solution is correct. Now, here's Don Hancock for Aniston.
Today, millions are switching to Aniston. For Aniston is the modern way to relieve headache suffering. There's nothing to fuss with, nothing to mix or spill. Just easy-to-take little tablets that you carry right in your pocket or purse. And Aniston is the fast way to prolonged relief.
Prove it. Next time you have a headache,
take an Anacin.
Anacin must give you fast, prolonged relief or your money back. I'll repeat that. If you're not thoroughly satisfied that Anacin does much more for your headache pain, simply return the unused portion and your money will be refunded. So tomorrow, ask your druggist for the small, inexpensive package containing 12 Anacin tablets. Take only as directed. If pain persists or is unusually severe, see your physician. Remember, there's only one Anacin. Don't be satisfied with anything less. Next time you have a headache pain,
take an Anacin.
But how, Maestro?
Time! All right, son. You know which of these respectable citizens killed the three girls? Sing out.
Dad, what was the message Lucille Dubois left in her own blood?
Start of a killer's name. Capital M period, space, capital K-I-N for Canella.
Yes. But what did the capital M period stand for?
Well, it could only mean the initial of one of the Canella's first names, Ellery.
Right. How can it possibly represent one of the first names, Nicky? Milford, Madge, Margaret, all M's. If Lucille had presence of mind enough to write that message, certainly she wouldn't have left an ambiguous clue. A clue that could refer to any of the Canellas. So when she wrote that capital M period, she didn't mean the initial of one of their first names. She meant some other abbreviation. One she thought would be perfectly clear.
What, Maestro?
Well, Sergeant, what abbreviation, other than a first initial, usually precedes a last name?
Huh?
Abbreviation for Mr., Mrs., or Miss. Oh, but no, that would be MR, MRS. And Miss has no abbreviation.
Oh, so it can't be that either, Ellery.
It can't stand for Mr., Mrs., or Miss in English. But how about French?
French?
What?
Mrs. Canella's maid was French. And that reader's report in her book actually remarked that the author obviously thinks in French. What's the French abbreviation for Mrs.? Any schoolboy knows that. Capital M, small M-E for Madam. Miss, capital M, small L-L-E for Mademoiselle. But for Mr., Monsieur, it's simply capital M, period.
No, get him, Billy. Sorry, I'll see you all sizzle for this.
Oh, yeah. I disagree, Mr. Canella. If anyone's going to sizzle, it's you.
And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the solution to our mystery. We'd like to thank Mr. Jory for being our guest armchair detective this evening. And as mementos of the occasion, Anacin has for Mr. Jory a beautiful Gruen, very thin wristwatch, a copy of my new mystery anthology, Rogue's Gallery, and a subscription to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine.
Ellery will be back in a moment with a preview of next week's story. Meanwhile, remember, because it relieves headache pain so fast,
take an Anacin.
Because it gives prolonged relief,
take an Anacin.
Because it's made like a doctor's prescription,
take an Anacin.
There's only one Anacin. Get Anacin tomorrow. And now, Ellery, how about next week's case? Got another mystery with three or four murders?
No, Don, only one murder next week. But it's one of the most confusing to come our way in a long time.
A tough one, huh?
Yes, we had so much evidence, we didn't know what to do with it. Not to mention the problem of the bending corpse.
The bending corpse?
Looks like that did it, Don. Now you'll have to wait till next week when Anacin presents The Adventure of the Happy Marriage.
If you are suffering miseries of a cold, why take chances with untried remedies when time-tested, reliable Hill's cold tablets may promptly relieve that dull, headachey feeling and the muscular aches and soreness of colds? Double your money back if you do not get satisfactory relief from such distress in half an hour. Take only as directed. Time the action. Only Hill's offers you double your money back if you do not get half-hour relief. Hill's cold tablets.
This is Ellery Queen saying good night for Anison.
Anison is a product of the Whitehall Pharmacal Company. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Hello? No, I'm not Pamela North.
She hung up as usual. Maybe I'd better practice up on my falsetto. In a hurry this time. Hello? I am not... Dead. Oh, the door. Maybe he didn't believe me. No, I'm not Pamela North.
Well, of course not. I am.
Oh, hello, Pam.
Oh, I'm glad to be home, darling.
Wasn't the reunion fun?
It was awful. Everybody sat around noticing how much older everybody else looked.
Postmortem, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Darling, is there a man in your life?
Of course, dear. You.
There must be somebody else. Because I'm pretty sure I haven't been calling myself up and asking me if I weren't Pamela North.
Darling, you're not well.
I'm in perfect health. Listen, some goon has been phoning every hour and asking for you. As soon as I convince him that I'm not you, he hangs up.
Well,
it's reasonable enough, but...
I wonder if it has anything to do with the little man.
What little man?
The one who followed me home.
Maybe I should have asked you about the men in your life.
Frighten me, darling. The street was so dark, and he was so gray, sort of, and indistinct. I ran.
Did he run after you?
I don't know.
I would have.
You did.
But you slowed up for me.
No.
You answer it. I wouldn't want to disappoint him again.
All right, darling. Hello? Yes, this is Pamela North. Hello? Jerry.
I know, he hung up. Probably thinks it's good, clean fun.
You know, darling, I am getting scared.
Oh, nothing to get scared about. You're beautiful and... Come into the window.
All right, darling, wait.
Is that your little man coming down the street?
Yes, sir. He's looking up at the house numbers. I thought he was only a nasty little old man, but...
Come away from the window.
What are you going to do?
Call the police.
Oh, I may just be imagining things, Jerry. My imagination can't be that vivid.
There may have been a car backfire.
Oh, no, those were shots.
I'll take a look.
Jerry, don't you go near that window.
Relax, darling. No one could see me up here. Funny.
What is?
I think it's deserted.
The little man?
He's gone, too. Maybe that was a car backfiring. At any rate, most people would think so.
Darling, we've heard guns being fired too often.
Well, whoever fired those shots isn't there anymore. Neither is your little man. I sort of suspect he's disappeared from our lives. I hope.
That is our doorbell.
Uh-huh.
Let's make believe we're not home, Jerry.
It might be important.
That's what I mean.
I'd better see who that is. It's silly being terrified by nothing, Pam.
Hey, you can answer the door if you wish, darling, but I'm going to keep right on being terrified.
Well, if you insist.
Oh, no. No, I'm going with you. I want to be terrified in company.
All right, but get over to one side. I'm going to open the door.
All right, darling. The little man.
So it is. Won't you come in, please? Thank you. Shut the door, darling.
Uh-huh.
Are you... Come on, North.
Yes, I am. Jerry, he's ill.
Not ill. Please, let him speak. They will kill you, Pamela.
You need a doctor. You better not bring yourself by speaking.
Must speak. Don't need doctors. Must speak. I heard them... Red Line Bar. Kill Pamela North.
I've got him. He collapsed suddenly. Hot wrapped up. I'll lay him down here on the sofa. Get his coat open.
Shall I phone for a doctor, darling?
No. There's nothing a doctor can do for him.
Dead?
Chest full of bullets. Yes, he's dead.
Oh, poor little man. But who...
He came here to warn you against a murderer, darling. But the murderer got to him first.
All right, get the stiff out here, boys. Well, Mr. and Mrs. North, you have made your contribution to the city morgue again.
I wish we knew whom we contributed.
No identification, Adam. Just a tramp.
Sergeant Mullins, he was killed because he wanted to warn me. And I ran away from him.
Easy, darling. You couldn't have known that.
But who would want to kill you, Mrs. North?
I don't know. Jerry and I have helped catch a few criminals.
I don't think it's that. Otherwise, they would have been gunning after both of us. The little man said the plans were to kill Pamela. And the man who kept phoning asked for Pamela North.
Wanted to make sure she was here, and then he was going to come around and...
ran into the little man. He must have recognized him and...
shot him. But the little man remained alive long enough to... to what?
He didn't mention no name.
No, Mullins, no name.
That's too bad. And who do you got in the hoop?
Well, that's not much use. Pam and I can't live indefinitely under police protection.
Well, what are you figuring on doing?
Remember what somebody said once, the best defense is a good attack? Well, that's what we're going to do.
Who?
Pam and I are going to have a drink.
This ain't no time for lightning tricks.
At the Red Line Bar.
Down, Lutz.
I want to know who stopped that jockey.
Stop that noise.
What?
Your language. What's your language, buddy?
There's a berth in the gutter waiting for you. Go fill it.
Unhand me a big bucket.
Come on, George.
Jerry, this isn't getting us anywhere.
It's lots of good, clean fun, though.
In a raucous sort of way. There he goes.
There he went. Well, nobody seems to have noticed it.
Somebody has just noticed me, darling.
That drunk, he's in again. Oh, the guy's a virtuoso.
Lady, are them whistles vice racy?
I beg your pardon, bartender?
Are you considering swapping partners?
Oh, no. No, I like this one.
Then I'll throw that bum out of
here. Don't bother. We're leaving. Come on, Sam.
All right, darling.
The decorations may not be so nice, but you do meet such lovely people at the Red Lion Bar.
Mm-hmm. We must invite them to a nightmare sometime.
I'd rather give up sleeping. The door, m'lady.
Yes, sir. Oh, yes. Good to breathe air again.
The atmosphere in that joint should be bottled and sent to Hitler.
Oh, darling. Our idea wasn't so good, was it?
Just a second, darling.
My shoelace.
There. All right, now. What'd you say?
Our idea wasn't so good. Coming to the Red Line Bar, I mean.
I'm not so sure of that. You see, we have company.
Yes.
Don't stop and don't look back. We're being followed.
Maybe
too many cars and people around. You'll wait.
I don't doubt it, darling. We have to...
We'll turn at this corner. There. Now, quick. Back into that doorway. Our friend will be coming around the corner in a minute. There he comes now. And when he passes...
Jerry,
it's the drunk.
Oh, that beautiful lady.
It's no good, pal. You were walking a very straight line trailing us. You see, I saw you.
So what?
I don't like being followed. Not unless there's a good reason. What's yours?
I was taking a walk. It ain't unconstitutional, is it?
Oh, I see. Sam, do you remember anything in the Constitution about taking a stock at anyone?
I don't think so.
Good. Then I should be able to go ahead with a clear constitution, so to speak.
Hey, wait a minute. What are you doing it to?
Beat the living daylights out of you, do you mind?
Do I mind yet? You ain't got a right.
I'm bigger than you are.
Don't get reckless. You can keep my focus.
Jerry, he got away.
No, Dolly, I let him get away. Because I want to find out where he's going.
Clever of you, darling, to have a taxi waiting outside the bar for us.
I thought we might need one in a hurry, so I gave Mahatma his instructions. Right, Mahatma?
Right, wrong. It's all a question of history, Mr. North.
Better keep your eyes on that car we're following, or your history will come to a sudden close.
Maybe I would be happier. Maybe that is the best thing. As I sit here listening to the quiet ticking of the meter, I say to myself, Mahatma, whither art thou blowing? Don't look now, Mr. North, but if we keep on driving in the same direction any longer, we are all going to be swimming.
Jerry, isn't that the Atlantic Ocean?
Sorry, I'm afraid it's only Long Island Sound. Careful, Mahatma, he's turning off the road.
I better stop.
There's a gate up ahead, darling, in this wall to our left.
Must be an estate. There he goes. Through the gate.
Gate swung to behind him.
Let's take a look up close. It's a nice night.
Cold. Jerry.
Is that a horse or a dog?
Oh,
from the other side of the gate, thank heaven.
Oh, darling, we're not going in.
It is too late to visit. That mailbox on the side of the road. At least we'll find out who owns the joint. Let's see. Douglas Grant.
Douglas Grant? Jerry, I know who he is.
Name sounds familiar to me, too. But get it back to the car and away from here. I don't want that dog to arouse anyone's suspicion.
Oh, all right, Jerry. I can't understand why Douglas Grant should want to kill me, darling.
Well, we've no real indication that he does.
All I did was witness his marriage to Joan. It was an elopement, Jerry, and terribly romantic. Even though Douglas was suspected of being a racketeer.
Wait a minute. I remember now. Grant's name was in the papers. He's going to marry that hardware heiress, Barbara Seldon. Their engagement's been announced, and...
Oh, but he can't do that, darling. He's married to Joan.
Who knew about that marriage beside you?
Timmy Jones. He was the other witness. But, he died shortly afterwards. So, I guess I'm the only one who knows. Outside of Joan, of course.
Uh-huh. Darling, were you fond of Joan?
She was a very good friend of mine before I married you. Why do you?
Because I've an idea that Joan is among the missing. I didn't think you would. Thanks anyway, Mullen. So long. No record of her, Pam. No record of any divorce. No record of her death.
Douglas Grant is planning to marry again. Jerry, he must be sure that she's going to be
here. Uh-huh, very sure. And there's only one way he could be sure. Come on, darling. We're going back to Long Island.
Please, you, Mr.
North. It's all right. Pam, have you got the liver?
Pounds of it. He would have a great day. It took every ration point I had.
Never mind. We'll eat spinach.
Here's the joint again.
Pam, you stay with Mahatma. I'm just going to take a look around. Let me have a little, please.
Here, darling. But are you sure it's safe?
Uh-huh. I'm not going to interview Mr. Grant. Not just yet.
Mrs. North. Suppose their dogs don't like liver.
Mahatma, Jerry's been gone an awfully long time. I'm scared.
Speaking philosophically, don't mind.
What kind of philosophy is that?
I will explain to you some other time when my teeth ain't rattling. What's that?
Oh, darling, I was so...
Relax, sweetheart. The worst is yet to come.
That's where the Mahatma goes. Goodbye.
Wait a minute, Mahatma.
Did you find anything, Jerry?
Uh-huh. A smear of cement under the floorboard of Mr. Grant's motorboat.
Really?
I didn't go near the house. Grant and his little friend are at home. But I did go to the boathouse. I found a motorboat and a rowboat. We can't use the motorboat, but I pushed the rowboat along shore. We can reconceive it.
If we want to.
Oh, but we do want to. Aren't you forgetting that smear of cement?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the cement. But the only thing is... What about it?
Pam, you and Mahatma will have to come with me. I'll need a little help.
Darling, what are we going to do?
I didn't you know? We're going rowing.
One more shove, Mahatma, and we'll have this thing afloat.
One more shove, and Mahatma will be flat on a skitter.
Never say die. Come on.
There. That's floating.
For how long?
No kibitzing. All aboard.
Hey, darling, you know I love to go boating. But at midnight...
It's a very fine boat. Columbus crossed the ocean in a boat like this.
I'm not Columbus.
Neither am I, but I want to go fishing.
You ain't got no fishing rod.
I'm not fishing for fish. I'm fishing for evidence.
In Long Island Sound?
Uh-huh. Remember the cement.
You should let me forget it.
What's one other thing, darling? Grant is planning to marry again for money. He wouldn't risk bigamy. That's why I spent half the day going over those charts of the sound. I had a hunch, and the cement confirmed it. Get in, Pam.
Easy now. There.
How is it?
Yeah.
Climb in, Mahatma.
Okay, but my philosophy don't approve.
Wait for baby. There, we're all aboard.
Jerry, darling, you know how big Long Island Sound is.
Roughly.
Why? And you expect to find anything beneath it?
If he'd given that, darling, Grant wouldn't have dared cart his evidence around too long. He would have picked the nearest and deepest spot. That's where we're going. Grab an oar, Matt.
I should have stuck to my cab. Okay.
Then stroke.
Golly, it's dark out here in the water. Clouds over the moon.
Well, I don't want Grant to see us.
Dark. Cold. Jerry, I'm shivering.
You want to row?
I'm not that cold.
Mr. North, maybe you rowed for Harvard. Me, all I ever did in this line was row a babe around Central Park. I'm on a verge of collapsing.
Take it easy, Manhattan. We're just about where we should be. That big locust tree lying up with the lighthouse there. Triangulated with... Pull your oar in, Matt.
If I got this right...
You like this spot, darling?
The water's deepest here.
There must be other deep spots in the Sound.
But none right off Mr. Grant's estate. Excuse me while I stand up.
Don't ask me. Ask the boat.
Why, it don't capsize. I will never understand. Hey, Mr. North.
Yeah? You were taking off your clothes.
That's right.
Oh, that's quite all right, Mahatma. Jerry always takes off his clothes when he gets into a rowboat. Something that happened in his childhood, no doubt.
There. You like my shorts, Mahatma? Well, here goes.
Jerry, where are you going?
Swimming. So long.
He went over.
He went under.
He'll be up. Look, the moon is coming out. Ain't it a beautiful sight?
Jerry, coming up out of that water would be even more beautiful. Oh, I wish... Jerry!
Hello, Dolly. The water's fine.
You come right out of Long Island Sound.
Oh, I'm going down again.
I married a madman.
Mrs. North, there is always a reason for everything. For example, oysters is now in season. Maybe Mr. North is picking his own.
If he is, I'll serve him to them.
Don't look now, but he's surfaced again.
Sit tight while I climb in. Oh, that's better.
You have a nice swim, Dad.
Wonderful. I found what I was looking for. See?
What is it? Looks like a piece of silk that might have been ripped off a dress.
It was ripped off a dress. I ripped it off.
The dress? Under there?
Yes, darling. And Joan Grant is inside that dress.
Boy, am I glad to be out of that boat.
So am I. Oh, Jerry, it's dreadful.
No, not pleasant. Pity we left our taxi so far away. If Grant spotted us in that moonlight...
Jerry, Grant killed her, didn't he?
I suspected that when I saw the cement in his boat. It's a common practice of gangsters to get rid of a corpse permanently by encasing its feet in a solid block of cement and dumping it into a river or...
Or the Sound. Oh, Jerry. Joan was such a lovely, gentle girl.
Oh, no, Sam. At any rate, I rather think Grant's jig is up.
You're being a little hasty, aren't you?
What? Douglas Grant.
Evening, Blake. No, 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 no. Be careful. I have a gun. And so has my, associate. Peter?
Yes.
Briscom. The drunk.
Hiya, pal. Keep the mitts up.
The moonlight betrayed you, Mr. Oh, Pamela, won't you introduce us?
Jerry's my husband. Gerald North.
Oh. Well, congratulations, Mr. North. You make a very handsome couple. Too bad, isn't it, that your marriage no longer has any future?
Bad you found the body, North. Because I think the boss is out mixing a lot of cement for the three of you.
Help him kill his wife, Pete?
Nah. I was passing a little time in a state pen at that moment.
Then why get involved in a murder rap now?
You want to tell me a boogie story?
No. Pete, you know who we are?
Yeah. Amateur dicks.
We work with the police.
So what?
They've got a detective tailing us ever since this case began.
That's a lie. I was tailing you myself the night after the bum got his. There was nobody else on you.
Are you sure?
Well, where are they?
They'll be here. They may be too late to save us, but they'll get you.
Forget it.
Mr. North, maybe I could jump him. Even if I stopped a few, you might
He's
be able to...
He's got a Tommy gun, Mahatma. He's also getting ready for the electric chair.
Look, mister, You're talking through your hat.
Don't forget, Pete, no matter how much money you squeeze out of Grant, it won't do you any good where you're going.
Cut that talk out.
I'm sorry for you. You've been suckered, Pete. Suckered good.
Yeah?
Where's Grant?
I told you, he's out fixing.
You mean that's what he told you? Maybe he's leaving you here holding the bag.
Say, Captain, his wife's killing on me. I was independent.
How about the other murder?
You think Grant's gonna... No.
Why not? If we die, he's clear on his wife's murder. Then he throws you to the cops.
Yeah? Then I'd talk. I'd tell him.
What would you tell them, Pete?
Pete, he's gonna kill
me. No, he won't. I'll give it to him.
No, you freaking fool!
Oh. Yeah. He's dead, the dirty murderer. I did it with me little Tommy gun.
Let me take a look.
Good for you, Pete.
Thanks.
There's something else you may want to thank me for.
Mr. North, that was a blow of true magnificence.
I had to do it. He's a killer.
You mean Grant? Well, for killing that rat, he deserves a medal.
I didn't mean Grant.
But Pete couldn't have killed Joan.
I didn't mean Joan either, darling.
Oh, the little man.
While I massage him once more. He will now remain unconscious a while longer.
Nice going, Mahatma.
Jerry, I knew you were working on Pete psychologically. That's why I screamed that Grant was going to do it.
You did it very well, darling.
But how do we know Pete killed a little man?
Well, for one thing, because we know Grant didn't.
Oh, we do.
Of course. Grant called you by your maiden name, Pamela Blake. He didn't know you were married. Therefore, he couldn't have been the one who came to our house and killed the little man there when he recognized him as the man he'd seen in the bar.
Oh, I guess so. And besides, the little man said that the plan was to kill Pamela North. But Grant didn't know that. He thought I was still Pamela Blake, which is the name he must have told Pete when he hired Pete to kill me. Pete must have checked and found out I was married. And so the little man overheard him say, Pamela North.
Right, darling. But one other thing. We haven't said anything about any other murder. Yet Pete said he's been trailing us since the bum got his, remember?
Uh-huh.
And do you know why the little man rushed to warn us? His name was Franklin.
Franklin? Joan's father.
No.
Oh, darling, you're very bright.
Oh, don't be silly. I'm just inspired.
Like how?
Well, like this.
You again? Where is that wrench? Now, will you be quiet?
Me again,
Jerry. All right. All right.
Hey, what's going on in the back of the cab? Uh-oh. Kissing game. Speaking philosophically, I bet it's fun.
You're much too young to handle business matters.
Oh, I was 67 last month.
You're still my baby sister. I have crowns every time I send you around the corner to the store. You could hardly expect me to send you on an errand like this.
Well.
Listen to me for a minute.
Yes?
I want you to wait here in the house for me until I return.
Yes, of course.
You're not to answer the doorbell if it rings.
I understand.
I shall bring the food back with me.
All right.
I never intended to break my vow and leave this house. But for your sake and mine, I must.
Oh, why?
There's some important reason why we've not received our allowance. I'm going to see Mr. Douglas and find out. Mr. Douglas?
Yes?
I came here to your home for only one reason. Our allowance.
Well,
My sister and I have not received any money from you in the past 4 weeks.
Yes, I know that, Miss Crawford.
Well?
I've been meaning to drop around and go over the entire matter with you.
Well, what do you mean?
Well, I have some rather shocking news for you.
Well, what is it?
You haven't any more money.
You mean it's gone? All of it?
Yes. I regret to say it is.
I don't understand.
You and your sister are receiving a weekly income from the interest and securities that were left you both.
I know.
As the administrator of the estate, I have handled these securities to the best of my ability.
Yes.
Unfortunately, the companies that you held stock in were non-essential industries. The curtailments of war wiped them out.
Mr. Douglas, I don't believe you.
Well, I'm sorry you feel that way, Miss Crawford, but it's true.
I think you've been dishonest with it.
Oh, now, just a minute, please.
And in view of that, you leave me very little choice.
What do you mean?
When I leave here, I shall go to the police.
Well, what for?
To have you arrested for stealing our money. It was too large a sum to just dissolve in the manner you described. Why did you lock that door?
I've been hoping you'd come here. That's why I stopped sending you the money.
Are you trying to frighten me?
No. I'm merely going to tell you.
What? You're joking.
You think so?
Keep away from me. Keep away. Keep away.
Doesn't sound too good for that poor old lady, does it? I'm afraid that Mr. Douglas knows what he said, aren't you? Well, I'll try to be in the seat next time for the rest of his exciting story. Another case from the files of Mr. District Attorney. This is Peter Lorre closing the door of the Mystery Playhouse. Good night. Please pass. This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.
California, on behalf of independent Chevron gas stations and Standard stations throughout the West, invites you to Let George Do It. Another adventure of George Valentine.
Personal notice, danger is my stock and trade. If it's so far over your head you can't even reach it with a sky hook, you got a job for me, George Valentine. Write full details.
Dear Valentine, here's a laugh. Private Dick falling for that screwy ad of yours. Her name is Joe Logan. We ran across each other a couple of times, but that's not important. Here's the deal. I'm meeting somebody at the Half Moon Motel tonight. I'm not the sensitive type, but something about this rings phony. So if you read about me in the obituary column tomorrow, I want you to cry murder, good and loud. Enclosed is $100.
$100 for your trouble. But if you hear my sweet gravel voice over the phone before noon tomorrow, forget the whole thing and buy yourself a drink. Signed, Joe Logan.
I'm not buying that, Angel. It's too pat. Joe Logan knocked off by a hit-and-run driver last night of all nights.
Yeah, but don't forget it says here that Mr. Logan had his customary snoopful when he was clipped by that car on a deserted stretch of Whitman Highway.
And not too far away from the Half Moon Motel. Better put your ear stoppers in, Brooksy.
Huh?
Yeah. I'm going to cry bloody murder the way my client wanted it. Good and loud.
Look, Valentine, I don't want to be antisocial, but the only thing I've got eyes for this morning is a report just sent in. Frank Potter, prominent banker and philanthropist, was murdered.
How about one Joseph Logan? I think he was murdered, too.
You think, but this I know. Frank Potter was murdered. And he happened to be a close friend of the police commissioner.
Oh.
Yes, sir. And the commissioner doesn't like his friends being bumped off unless I can produce the miscreant 5 minutes later. So call me tomorrow.
Oh, that's a fine attitude, Lieutenant. The only safe way to get murdered in this town is to be a friend of the commissioner's.
Now look, Miss Brooks, why don't we talk this over on my day off when I can afford to be a gentleman, huh?
Oh.
Right now, I want... now... Yes, Riley. Huh? Okay, I'm on my way out there now. What's that? What's the name of that place? Go on, I'm listening. And your sis, Mrs. Cronin, identified the man she saw with Potter? Okay, Sergeant. Okay, I'm as good as there right now.
Well, Brooksy, I guess they're too busy for us today.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll be back, Lieutenant, when this storm is over.
No, you don't, Valentine. You're not leaving here.
Well, what's the matter with you anyway?
Do you know where Frank Potter was murdered?
Look, I'm not my usual psychic self this morning. Where?
The Half Moon Motel.
George!
Go on, Lieutenant.
Yes, the Half Moon Motel. And a dame out there, a Mrs. Cronin, identified your client, Joe Logan, as the man who did the killing.
I'm surprised, Mr. Valentine. The police didn't get around to me yet.
Any time now, Maggie. They know that in a racket like Logan's, the secretary knows more about a boss than anybody else in the world.
Maggie, don't you have any idea what Mr. Logan might have been afraid of last night?
I just know that Joe's death was no accident. I didn't even know he wrote that note.
Not that it matters to Logan now, but that letter to me puts him right there in the Half Moon Motel with Potter.
Why does it? Joe had other clients. Whenever he didn't want to meet somebody here at the office, he'd call up the Half Moon Motel. I know the police would love to pin this on Joe, but I'm not going to let them out.
I'll cut it, Maggie. Let me have that.
What?
Yeah, that page from the appointment pad. You're too nervous for any sleight of hand today. 8:00. Frank Potter. Half Moon.
Oh, so you knew he was going to meet Mr. Potter, didn't you?
All right, I did. But Joe didn't kill anybody.
All right, maybe I believe it. But that's not good enough, Maggie. You got to make sure. Now, what about the deal your boss had with Potter?
I don't know anything about it.
Oh, you don't, huh? Okay, come on, Brooksy. We're wasting our time.
Wait.
You want to play this hand face up with me?
It's the truth. I don't know what Potter wanted with Joe.
Or perhaps what Joe wanted with Potter.
Whichever way it was, but they did have a quarrel right here in the office yesterday morning.
That just makes the case stronger against Logan.
I couldn't hear what they were fighting about. Finally, Potter slammed out of here in a rage.
Say, just one more point, and let's face it. The medical examiner reported that Joe was a little more than slightly crocked when that car sideswiped him.
Joe never drank so much he didn't know what he was doing.
Just the same, how about a list of his favorite bars? It might help if I knew where he was before he went to meet Potter.
Joe's favorite bars? How do you want them, from A to Z?
Oh, George, can't you see she's all upset?
Could have been Johnny's place near City Hall, or Chris's on West Laredo Street, or it could have been the...
Mort's Paddock Bar on Whitman Highway?
What's that, Brooksy?
Look at this book of matches in the ashtray. Mort's Paddock Bar, where good sports meet.
Yes, that's another place Joe used to like to sit and talk to Mort.
Whitman Highway, that's on the way to that motel.
And Mr. Logan...
Later, Maggie.
Well, Mr. Valentine, should I be forthright?
Oh, by all means, Mort.
If it was anybody else, Mr. Logan, I would have said he was well under the influence when he left my place last night.
But seeing it was Mr. Logan, what would you say?
Well, you see, he's one of those good-looking, strapping men who, just get convivial, so to speak.
Well, that's a nice way of putting it, Mort.
You know something, miss? Mr. Loring's going to leave an empty place at my bar. You know, he was a swell talker. I picked up a lot of new words from him. Yes, I guess you'd say Mr. Logan was epigrammatic when it came to repartee. the poor fella.
Yeah, I see what you're trying to say. But tell me, Mort, what time did he leave here last night?
Oh, about 8, I'd say.
Before or after 8?
Well, couldn't be sure, but he did say he was leaving his car in my parking lot till he got back.
Well, didn't he say where he was going?
No, miss, but it must have been near here because he said he was going to walk it. Ironical, isn't it? Just this time, when he decides not to use his car, he meets up with a pedestrian's fate.
Not just ironical, Mort. It's more than that.
Yeah, now you see right out that window? Down the highway a couple of 100 feet? That's where it all happened, on the right-hand side there. Just by that first telephone pole. Ah, poor fella.
Okay, thanks a lot, Mort. You've been a great help.
I'm afraid I didn't have very much to say.
But you did, believe me.
Well, drop it again. Always nice to talk to people.
Well, darling, do I ask questions or are you going to let me in on the brainstorm?
Take another look down the highway, Brooksy. What do you see?
A pretty highway. Credit to the state. One lane going east, the other going west. An island of trees in the middle. Yourself. I see what you mean.
Yeah. Joe Logan left the panic bar and started to walk down the highway on right-hand side, walking toward the Half Moon Motel. Not away from it.
Well, if you're right, George, Logan never even got there to kill Potter.
Which should simplify things for us, but doesn't. I've got a hunch whoever killed Potter ran Logan's arm.
Yeah. Well, what next?
Well, I understand there's a Mrs. Potter. Have a talk with her, Brooksy, huh? See if she knows what business her husband had with Logan.
Okay, where'll I meet you?
Back at the office. In the meantime, I'm going to scrape up an acquaintance with this Mrs. Cronin, who swears she saw Logan at the Half Moon Motel.
Look, Bob, since you ain't a dick, beat it. I got business with Mrs. Cronin.
So have I, goon boy.
I said beat it.
Now, I'll always remember I do have neighbors.
You leave this to me, Sheila.
Are you getting out of this doorway, or do I have to step over you?
Look, you do as I told you.
So I step over you.
You know how to make an impressive entrance, don't you?
I think I'm forgetting this, mister.
If you do, I'll be glad to refresh your memory.
Oh, you shouldn't have done that to Charlie. Huh? After all, he's just a bookie trying to squeeze out a living.
Well, from all these racing forms around, you seem to be one of his best customers.
And I owe him $3,000 just for yesterday. And Charlie's getting a little impatient. You don't have $3,000 on you, have you?
Just a few pennies shy. Now, Mrs. Cronin...
If you were to call me Sheila, what would I have to call you?
Well, that depends on your vocabulary. After I called you a liar.
I liked you the moment you came in. Can I get you a drink?
You didn't see Joe Logan here last night, did you?
Strange how it happened. I just looked out the window, and there he was in that cabin across the court.
How come you knew Logan at all? What did you ever have to do with him?
I needed a private detective once. Someone told me about Joe.
What kind of a deal was it?
Strictly confidential. Had nothing to do with this. The police let it go at that. Why don't you relax?
You're still lying, Sheila.
Whatever you say, George.
No one who could afford to lose $3,000 a day at jungle up at a cheap motel like this.
Oh, you're so understanding, dear. But why don't you forget it?
It'd be easier if I knew how come you were here so conveniently to identify Logan.
That was just an accident. I'm supposed to be with a girlfriend in Seattle. That's what my husband thinks.
Oh?
I gamble too much. Just like other people do other things too much. Once in a while, I take a room like this and splurge. Bet on anything. Bet all the time. The bigger the odds against me, the better. It's in my blood. It's like a disease.
Must be an expensive disease.
Oh, poor darling. I talk too much, don't I? I want you to make me forget that I never win. I bet you can do that. What odds do you want?
That's very nice, Sheila. But not good enough.
What better odds do you want, you?
Oh, thanks. Now that you've cleared the air, we can get back to business.
Oh, George, I'm so sorry. Did I hurt you?
What time did you tell Lieutenant Riley that you saw Logan?
8 o'clock.
How come you're so sure?
Well, Charlie just phoned to give me the result of the last dog race in Miami. I happened to notice the time. You're not still angry with me.
You want to bet?
You're not leaving.
Sorry, Sheila. I expect to be a very busy boy.
Oh, George.
First a phony accident, then a number. A murder. And now you.
Yes?
You going all out to make me stop wondering if you frame Logan. And somehow I think it all ties together. Now all I gotta do is prove it.
We'll return to tonight's adventure of George Valentine in just a moment. Meanwhile, a word about a very important matter of motoring. If your car's battery has been acting like a mule, temperamental and balky, here's an easy way to cure it. Have your battery serviced at a standard station or independent Chevron gas station. They'll inspect the water level, cables, terminal clamps, and test the battery's condition. And they'll be frank. If it just needs a charge, they'll tell you. If your battery's really on its last legs, they'll explain how a new Atlas battery can save you money. Every Atlas battery has its certified power capacity stamped on the case where you can read it.
And you'll find these capacities meet or exceed standards set by the Society of Automotive Engineers. The longer-lasting starting power of Atlas batteries, by the way, is backed by a written warranty honored everywhere by 38,000 Atlas dealers. Independent Chevron gas stations and standard stations are glad to service your battery, proud to offer you an Atlas battery when you need one. That's why they say and mean, we'll take better care of your car. And now back to tonight's adventure, George Valentine. A private detective, of all people, mails you $100 and tells you to cry murder if he's among the missing tomorrow morning. Sure enough, the gentleman, one Joe Logan, is run down by a car during the night. Then a prominent banker is found dead in a cheap motel. And an incredible blonde who prides herself on betting on anything puts the finger on your dead client as the murderer. All of which makes you decide to ask Joe Logan's secretary a few more important questions.
Come on, Maggie, think. What truck did Logan have with Sheila Cronin?
It was just a routine case, Mr. Valentine. It was more than a year ago.
Nothing involving that hot tip addict could be routine. She's too far out of this world. Now let's have the facts. Well?
I suppose he did go out with a couple of times. She kept after him.
Was it serious enough to feel she was the woman scorned? Make her want to frame Logan?
Joe could never be serious about any woman. There were too many of them.
All right, so he was a Casanova. What about the case?
The insurance company hired Joe to investigate Mrs. Cronin when some of her jewels were stolen. Everything proved to be on the up and up. Joe was only on the case a couple of days.
That doesn't give me much. That hot-eyed blonde is the key to this fancy frame-up. But why? That's what I got to find out.
You wanted to know about Mrs. Potter.
Yeah?
Joe never had her for a client. I even looked through all his personal papers.
Which also gets us nowhere. Unless Brooksy comes up with something on Mrs. Potter.
Miss Brooks, can't you see I'm dressing to go out?
Oh, I just thought, Mrs. Potter, that since your husband had some dealings with Joe Logan, you might know something about him.
I told you. I never heard of Joe Logan. Anyway, what right have you to question me like this?
I just thought you might be interested. If it might help solve Mr. Potter's murder.
I'm sure the police are doing all they can about it.
Well, you might make it easier for them if you told them all you know about Logan.
What makes you so sure I know this?
Whoa.
This Joe Logan.
He was killed, you know.
Well, that's just too bad. But he's not the first man to be knocked down by a hit-and-run driver. Now get out.
Oh, then you did know Joe Logan.
What?
Well, that's pretty obvious. There are only a few lines in the paper about his hit-and-run accident. Not the sort of thing you'd remember about a stranger.
You know, Miss Brooks, I should have obeyed my first impulse and had the butler throw you out. All right. I hired Joe Logan once.
Why didn't you tell that to the police when they questioned you?
It has no bearing on this case. Does that satisfy you, Miss Brooks?
Oh, not quite, but a good beginning. Well, I won't keep you any longer. I know you're anxious to get out and celebrate.
What did you say? Get out of here. Go on, get out.
Good work, Angel. I don't know what it means, but Mrs. Potter must have a good reason for denying that she knew Logan.
Well, it's hard to know what she's thinking. Vivian's a cold dish with a memorized smile.
Our friend Logan seems to have gone in for females who insist on being characters.
Mm.
Anyway, why can't we find any record of this deal with Mrs. Potter?
Maybe it's something you just don't put down on paper, huh?
Could be, Brooksy. Well, all we know up till now is that Potter and Logan had a quarrel.
Yeah, that's
both
right.
Both Sheila and Vivian were Logan's clients at one time or another. I'll make something out of that if we can.
Okay, Valentine. You said you want to see me?
Well, Charlie, you're a good sport. I didn't think you'd show.
The information you asked for over the phone, Valentine, I got it.
Well.
But how does it get me the $3,000 Sheila Cronin owes me?
Look, Charlie, I'm not guaranteeing anything. But you'll stand a better chance of collecting if you play along with me.
Well, I don't
business
know.
Is business, Charlie.
Okay. I don't know why it's so important, but it was 9 o'clock when I called Sheila about the last dog race in Miami.
Sure it wasn't 8?
Couldn't be. Races ain't over till almost 9.
Now we know Sheila was lying.
Yeah, but why?
What answers have we got if she just says I made a mistake?
Yeah, now look, chum, about the $3,000.
Talk to you later, Charlie. Right now I gotta get over to that paddock bar and see what use I can make of Mort Fisher's garrulity.
His what?
Don't look shocked, Charlie. That just means love of conversation.
Well, it's sure good to see you, Mr. Valentine. You know, I was hoping you'd drop in. How are you, miss?
Hi, Mort.
Say, look, you like to talk, Mort. I thought if we sort of sat around a while, you might remember something Logan said last night that could help us.
Why didn't you tell me this morning that the police think Mr. Logan bumped off this Potter guy? Then, ironically-like, meet up with an accident.
Oh, you found out, huh?
Oh, sure. Why, it's in the evening papers, miss. And piling irony on irony.
Yeah?
Look what happens to here right here in my own bar tonight. Did you ever see anything so, well, fortuitous, you know? You know who's sitting down there in the number one booth all by herself?
No, who, Mort?
Why, it's Porter's young wife. She's drowning her sorrows with champagne cocktails. Except she doesn't look too unhappy, if you ask me.
Then you know Mrs. Potter.
That's more of the irony, miss. She used to come in here with Mr. Logan.
Oh, hey, now we're getting somewhere.
But that's not all. 2 minutes after she comes in, that good-looking blonde from the Half Moon shows up. You know, the one who identified Mr. Logan, recognized her from the pictures in the paper.
You run a popular bar here, Mort.
Oh, just thanks. But it's mostly, of course, a location. Last bar on the highway for the next 5 miles.
Don't be so modest, Mort. Say, would you mind keeping Miss Brooks entertained?
Hey, but wait, I have got something else to tell you.
I'll be right back, Mort. Hello, Sheila.
Well, look at you. Sit down, George. I was just getting lonely.
No, thanks. What I've got to say won't take that long. Besides, you got to make another stop.
Do you want to bet I can make it more interesting?
Why did you lie about Logan? You never saw him at the Half Moon Motel. He never reached there.
I like my story better.
The dog race is not over in Florida till 9.
So I made a mistake.
Why did you lie? Did somebody make you do it?
I'm getting fed up with this place. Let's go somewhere else, George.
Or did you frame Logan because he had something on you? Was that jewelry hold-up a fake with Logan playing both ends against the middle?
What are you talking about?
I mean, get the insurance money and sell your jewels. So you could pay off characters like Charlie the Bookie.
You know something? I'm betting you could never prove that. Here. Hey, where are you going?
Oh, Mr. Valentine.
Tell me, Mrs. Potter, what kind of a job did you hire Logan to do for you?
I made one slip today with your secretary. That's par for the course.
Your husband was some 30 years older than you. You stood a lot to gain by his death.
Go on, you're doing the talking.
If Logan had anything to do with it, you'd want him out of the way, too, wouldn't you?
Sorry, Mr. Valentine, but you bore me. Good night.
Well, what'd you find out, George?
Tell you later, Brooksy.
You didn't let me finish before, Mr. Valentine.
What's that, Mort?
You know, talking about quirks of fate, last night about a half hour before he left, I was right here at the bar, you know, with Mr. Logan.
So you said.
And who should come in from, for a short quick window, but Mr. Potter. Now, I know it was him from his pictures.
Did you hear what they talked about?
Oh, they didn't so much as converse. I don't think Mr. Logan even knew the guy.
Oh, you must be wrong, Mort.
Oh, you could be very right, which is something I want to talk to Riley about. And let's see if we can nail him before he leaves the Half Moon Motel.
Why didn't we take the car, George?
Well, it's just a short walk, Angel.
Yeah.
Anyway, I have to have time to think. Try and make some sense out of this thing. So it doesn't sound too fantastic to Lieutenant Riley.
Mm. Better keep it out of the road, darling.
Yeah. Brooksy, when we get to the motel, call Maggie at home.
Yes, George?
Tell her to meet us at Logan's office. There's just one thing I want to clear up. Then I think we'll have this thing licked.
George, look out that car!
Get out of the driver! Hey, you all right, Angel?
Oh, so this is what gravel tastes like.
And that car was trying to run us down. The same thing that happened to Logan.
Yeah, and almost in the same place.
A baby blue convertible, a big one.
Say, I noticed that before. Parked on the lot next to the paddock bar.
And that's where we're going right now.
Oh,
Tell me something, Mort.
Hey, yeah, Mr. Valentine?
In the short time I was away, did you notice whether Mrs. Potter or Mrs. Cronin left your place?
Can't say with any exactitude, Mr. Valentine.
Oh.
But it seems I do remember both ladies being up and moving around. Of course, we're crowding up now, and...
Oh, St. George. Lieutenant Riley's going to stop by here and pick up the two, ladies. And I left that message for Maggie to be over at Logan's office. And that baby blue convertible of Mrs. Potter's is still in the parking lot.
Good, good. Now, if we don't find out what really happened, we never will.
Okay, Valentine, what's your story? The one we got says Logan killed Potter, and the commissioner likes that version, too.
Just a minute, Lieutenant. Oh, Brooksy.
Hmm?
Call into the outer office and see if Maggie's ready to take all this down.
Okay, George. So you think this is a photo finish between me and Mrs. Potter? Is that it, George, dear?
Lieutenant Riley, I've answered this man's questions all day. Do I have to go through this now?
If you don't mind, Mrs. Potter, yes.
You ready, Maggie?
Yes, Miss Brooks.
Okay, go ahead, George.
Okay. Okay, Riley, here's the way I see it. Joe Logan makes a deal with a woman who always needs money because she bets too much. Cooks up a deal with her to cheat the insurance company, then blackmails her.
But I didn't kill him.
Logan also talks to a pretty young matron, much younger than her husband.
So you think I'm pretty? Thank you, Mr. Valentine.
She wants Logan to help her get rid of her husband without involving her, and so she can still get a big chunk of his money.
I discussed that with Logan. That's as far as it went.
Keep going, Valentine.
Well, a wonderful plan is born, Lieutenant. Somebody makes an appointment for Logan to meet Potter at the Half Moon Motel. When Potter arrives, he's murdered. Then Logan is deliberately run down the road. And you know, Lieutenant, dead men tell no tales.
Yes, that much we know.
Yes, do get to the point, George.
Then enters what Mort would call the ironical touch. We're told that Logan and Potter had a violent quarrel the very day of the murder. Who should know better than the secretary who overheard it? Is that right, Maggie?
That's right, Mr. Valentine.
Then Mr. Potter does a very human thing. On the way to his appointment, which he knows he has to do with his wife, he stops in for a quick drink at Mort's bar.
He stands almost next to Logan, but they don't say a word to each other. Because they've never met before.
Ah, look, you gotta make more sense than this, Valentine, because I don't get it.
Oh, you'll get this, Lieutenant. Why were we told there was a quarrel? Because that would supply the motive for Logan to kill Potter. And who'd know enough about Sheila to force her to place Logan at a motel when he wasn't there at all?
A lot of questions, Mr. Valentine. How about some answers?
Coming to that, Mrs. Potter, coming to that. But just one final question. If Logan were proved as your husband's murderer, who would be in the position to hold you up for the rest of your life?
What?
Someone who had the proof that you were dickering with Logan. Maybe you weren't talking murder, but it might sound like it. Getting all this down, Maggie? You got that proof, haven't you? That's why you committed two murders.
Maggie!
What? Didn't you, Maggie?
Yes. You've got your facts all straight, Mr. Valentine. They make a wonderful confession. I may as well sign it now.
Here's one more proof, Mr. Valentine, about life being ironical.
What's that,
Mort? Oh, George, I don't know if I can stand much more irony in one case.
Well, just after you left, I mean after you asked me about Mrs. Potter and Mrs. Cronin, I checked with the waiters.
And?
They said neither one of the ladies left the place at all. And there you were, suspecting the both of them.
Well, that's all cleared up now.
Yeah, there was another lady who borrowed Mrs. Potter's car, Mort. She tried to run us down. We were getting a little too close to the truth for her comfort.
Hey, you know, folks, we've been through a whole lot together. Say, how about dinner tonight with me, you know, on the house?
Hey, how about that, Brooksy?
Oh, I think that would be perfectly ironical.
Good, good. Maybe we can stir up some exciting conversation. It gets awfully dull around this place sometimes.
Dull?
Oh, Mort, you can't mean that.
So help me, Miss Brooks. I don't know why you're giving me that look of physicality.
I'd be willing to bet there's not one car owner in 1,000 who could lubricate his car thoroughly. For there are more than 20 vital wear points on the average car, and if most of us tried to find them, it'd be pure guesswork. Even the expert lube men at the independent Chevron gas stations and standard stations don't rely on experience alone when they grease your car. Instead, they follow a precise lubrication chart recommended by the manufacturer of your car. And they use RPM greases and oils, each one tailor-made to protect those key wear points. Tailor-made, too, to smooth out road shocks, give you easier riding. So for low-cost maintenance and better riding, get a lube job with RPM greases every 1,000 miles. Get it at a standard station or independent Chevron gas station where they say and mean, we'll take better care of your car. Next week, when you tune our way for another adventure of George Valentine, you'll hear Lieutenant Riley saying...
Now, Valentine, you say your client was held up Tuesday night at 7 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
Well, according to this report, the only crimes that took place in our fair city on Tuesday night were a pickpocket apprehended at 7th and Duncan, and...
What's the matter, Lieutenant?
I should have remembered myself. The Hafey murder... Killer still at large. Victim previously married to... Here. Here, Valentine, you can have the honor. You've earned it.
Tonight's adventure of George Valentine has been brought to you by Standard of California on behalf of independent Chevron gas stations and Standard stations throughout the West. Let George Do It stars Robert Bailey as George with Francis Robinson as Claire. Wally Mayer appears as Lieutenant Riley. Tonight's story was written by David Victor and Herb Little Jr. and directed by Don Clark. Also heard in the cast were Gloria Blondell as Sheila Cronin, Virginia Gregg as Vivian Potter, Betty Lou Gerson as Maggie, Dick Ryan as Mort, and Tony Barrett as Charlie. The music is composed and conducted by Eddie Dunster. Your announcer, John Heaston. Listen again next week, same time, same station, to Let George Do It. This is the Mutual Don Lee Broadcasting System.
You knew the job was dangerous when you took it.
Radio production.